Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, hour two. This is the Herd in LA, live in Los Angeles. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. So I am not a conspiracy theorist. I kind of roll my eyes at it, but I don't even know if this classifies as a conspiracy theory, Joy Taylor. I don't think it does. I think it's obvious, and I think it's good business. And I think it's smart, and I understand it. So this isn't like Looney Tunes, like, you know.
I don't need my
COVID's a hoax.
Aluminum foil hat.
Yeah, like it's. You wouldn't even need. You could maybe just wear a normal hat. It's got.
So it's a strategy. It's just not an admitted strategy.
That's a great way to put it. What I'm about to talk about is a strategy.
Okay.
And by the way, there's, you know, as we know, and you and I have talked about on or off the air, is sometimes. It's always good if you're a billionaire or a major corporation to have an element of your business that's losing money. So if you're a billionaire and you have 50 companies, it's okay to have a bad one because eventually you can sell it off and then and write it off so it lowers your tax rate, right?
Yes.
So you know that's there's an upside to a bad company you can sell off and get a write off, right? So I saw this story: James Harden to miss at least 10 days for the Brooklyn Nets. That's interesting. James Harden never gets hurt. Ever. I mean, sometimes he's got a little pudge to him. I'm not sure if he has hamstrings. He's just like he's just a great offensive player. He's built differently. Though all of a sudden, suddenly he's hurt. The exact same time Kevin Durant comes back. That is remarkably ironic. One of the great advantages. And I don't know how exactly we got here, but one of the great advantages the NFL has over the NBA, there's not a huge gap between the best teams and the worst. I mean, hell, the Jags beat the Colts last year. The Raiders went into Kansas City and beat the Chiefs. The Jets beat the Rams. The Bengals crushed Tennessee and beat the Steelers. Like that, this is every week. The Bears humiliate Tampa. Okay, in the NBA, it's different. The bottom third of the league is awful. And I'm not talking two or three teams. I'm talking like eight. Minnesota's awful. Houston, Washington, Orlando, Detroit, Toronto. And they're not only bad, at times it looks like they're not trying to win in the second half of the season. What does that mean? In the NFL, there is an urgency you have to play. Even if you're a star player and you're playing a 2-7 team. Get your butt out there. The Giants last year with a new coach, no preseason, almost beat the Rams in L.A. with Sean McVay. You got to play. There's an urgency to play. In the NBA, there's not. The Lakers last six games without AD and LeBron playing crappy teams, they're 4-2. The Brooklyn Nets without Kevin Durant, 19-4, as Joy said earlier, is the best record in the league. And they're not playing KD. There's games they're not playing. Not playing Kyrie or KD. So my theory on this is, and I used to tell, you know, the NBA ratings have been down for several years, last couple especially, and people can blame whatever they want to blame. They can blame, you know, the too much politics, Black Lives Matter, all that stuff. You can blame it on cable. My takeaway is this. We're all more caffeinated. Our lives, there's more choices. You have got to create urgency so the games feel important to not just me, but to your stars. But when AD and LeBron and KD and Harden don't have to play, and they don't feel like they have to play, well, why the hell should I care? I know Mahomes with a broken toe, he gets concussed during a game. He is screaming with Andy Reid to get back on the field against Cleveland in a game they lead and control. They're arguing with each other. He's got a concussion. He's got his toes falling off. I'm not blaming KD, AD. I'm not blaming LeBron. I'm not blaming Harden. This is a strategy. There's no reason to play these guys. Just get him rested for the playoffs. We've seen Harden be overwhelmed physically in the playoffs. He's exhausted. Rest him for 10 days. We've seen AD and KD be brittle. Rest him. LeBron now second injury, 2-3 years. Rest him. There's no reason to play these guys. It's a strategy. But the problem is the Lakers have their next 8 games are national TV games. Why watch? They're not playing their stars. And so, I mean, 5 of the best 8 players in the NBA are on Brooklyn and the Lakers. Brooklyn's saying, we won without Kevin Durant. Kevin's back. James, take 10 days off. Get rested. They're going to win. They're going to keep winning their games. And so I told my daughter, it was either my worst parenting moment or my best. But I remember the only time I've ever made my daughter cry. It was about, she's 20. She was about 10 or 11 years old. And she went and she was playing basketball in Connecticut. And she was on a really good team, really well-coached team with a bunch of good girls. And they were a very good team. And she just played like crap. And she just didn't care. Like, you could just tell she didn't care. And on the way home, about a 10-minute drive, I just chewed her out. I said, if you don't care, then I'm not going on all these road trips. I'll buy in when you buy in. I said, but you don't care. Why am I driving all over the state in the winter to lousy gyms in the middle of nowhere I can't find on GPS, giving up my Sundays? If you don't care, if you do, I'm in. But you got to care first before I care. In the NFL, stars have to play hurt. You got to be out there. So I'm in because you're in. In the NBA, when the stars don't sense urgency, why should I watch? And I love the NBA. I'm an NBA guy. But I'll see you mostly in the playoffs because I know guys in the playoffs play hurt. You want to make a bet that James Harden's hamstring's good in the playoffs? You and I want to make a bet on that? Want to make a bet KD plays in the playoffs? I mean, again, if you don't show urgency, why should I as a consumer? If you don't show urgency as a child or a kid, why do I drive you all over the state to play softball? I'm not going to. But once you do, I'm totally in. And I made her cry, and I felt terrible, and it was either an awful parenting moment, but it's been something that we talk about all the time, my daughter and I, which is if you're into something, I'm into it. But you gotta love stuff first for me to give up weekends and time and hours and money and commitment. You got to care first, because I can't care more than you about your career, your life, your friends, your sports.
I think it's a good lesson.
All right. Well, I don't know. She didn't think about it. It was great at the moment.
What does she think about it now?
No, it's fine. She comes and visits me all the time, so she must still like me. All right, let's shift to football. Steve Berline, Super Bowl champ with the 92 Cowboys, 17 years in the NFL, broadcaster too, former Notre Damer, is now joining us live. Maybe I was a lousy parent. Steve, that parenting thing, there's no book on it, so was I a good parent or a bad parent?
You know what, Colin? It we'll find out in the long run, right? I think the fact that it's important to you and that you care is the most important thing when you look at it. You're trying to do the right things. Your kids know that, and it's going to work itself out fine.
All right. I feel better. Talk myself off the ledge now, Steve.
There you go. That's right.
So
that's
Sam
right.
Darnold to the Panthers. Everybody always thinks there's a winner and a loser in a trade. And I thought, actually, it's a win for Darnold out of that toxicity of New York. And it's actually, with all the draft picks the Jets have, it's kind of a win for Zach Wilson. Good God, they got 10 draft picks up top near the draft. I mean, how did you kind of look at the Darnold move for New York and the Panthers?
Well, I think you nailed it. Sam Darnold, I think a change of scenery could end up being a really good development for him. He's coming into a situation where he's got truly some pretty good talent around him offensively when you consider the fact that Teddy Bridgewater did not have Christian McCaffrey for almost the whole season last year. They've got Robbie Anderson. They've got DJ Moore, some other young talent there that he's going to have some weapons. And the question is, how is he going to adjust to a new system? But I do think he's going to do well in a different environment without the toxicity and the pressure of New York, like you mentioned. So I think that could end up being a good thing for him. My concern is for the Panthers. Now, they obviously gave up a sixth-rounder this year and then a second and fourth next year.
Yeah.
And Teddy Bridgewater is gone. I am not convinced that Sam Darnold's an upgrade over Teddy Bridgewater. And I know that might surprise a few people, but you got to consider Teddy Bridgewater last year was in a situation where he had no offseason to learn that offense and to get used to his teammates. He lost his number one weapon for most of the season in Christian McCaffrey. I'm not convinced that he wouldn't be able to do a better job with his experience in the NFL and his experience in that locker room than Sam Darnold right now. The Panthers gave up three picks to get Sam Darnold. They must like him. Hopefully he'll develop it. It'll work out for both sides.
So Kyle Pitts and the Dallas Cowboys. Story out today, Chris Mortensen. Jerry Jones likes Kyle Pitts. And part of me thought to myself, well, Kyle Pitts would make Dak more productive, and it would validate Dak's contract between CeeDee Lamb and Kyle Pitts and Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper. Dak would have very nice numbers. That, and a second year, by the way, in Mike McCarthy's system. Part of me thought, yeah, Jerry, who got some heat for the contract, looks at that and thinks, well, Dak's numbers are going to be great with Kyle Pitts. Is that too cynical, or what do you make of the story? Would you go after Pitts if you thought he was that special?
Well, the philosophy of a lot of these teams is the best player available, and I think there's a lot of merit to that in general. But you've got to think about which player is on the board still that is going to most impact your team where you need it the most. Cowboys are a very talented offensive team, as you said, with all those weapons out there. Having from a selfish standpoint as a quarterback, to have a chance at a guy like Kyle Pitts, to put in there as a resource for you over the middle, coming across the field on bootlegs, in the red zone with his size and his speed and his athletic ability. As a quarterback, of course, I'm going to be very excited about that. The question is that the best player? Maybe the best player available on the Cowboys board, but is he the best player available to help the Cowboys immediately this year? I'm sure they're evaluating all those things. They got the table set for the foreseeable future offensively. If Dak Prescott can stay healthy in that weak division, I think that you got to measure whether or not that one more explosive offensive player is more helpful to the overall picture than maybe a very impactful defensive player. And they've got to evaluate those things. I love Kyle Pitts. He's going to be a great player. The question is he the best pick for the Cowboys at number 10? They've got to make that call. They got to live and die with it.
Yeah. You know, it is more of an offensive league. He's going to be more productive, obviously, than any defensive player, and therefore perhaps more impactful. A lot of guys I've talked to have said that. It's like if you're going either way, if you got a quarterback who can deliver the ball, sometimes you just take the offensive guy because in what we're looking at in the NFL now, that guy is going to get you more yards and be more of a pain in the butt to defend than a defensive player is going to disrupt their offense.
Well, but listen to this, Colin. I mean, everybody talks about how the Cowboys fell apart last year when Dak Prescott went down. You know what their record was when he went down, right? They were 1-3, and they should have been 0-4 had they not won the Atlanta game on that funky onside kick that somehow worked out for them. The bottom line is you have to stop people at key times in football games as well.
Yeah.
If they don't do that, then it's not going to – you can have as explosive an offense as anybody in the league, but if you can't make the stops at key points in the ball game, it's going to come back to haunt you as well.
So Aaron Rodgers wants to host Jeopardy. Now, my first reaction, and I think a lot of people's first reaction is – like, that's a second full-time job, although game shows aren't really a full-time job. You tape most of the shows on Monday, Tuesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, and that's the work week. But could an argument – I was saying this earlier not to be a pop psychologist, that if you're frustrated with any part of your life, you got two options. You can just deny reality and just say, it'll get better. Everything's going to be better. Everything will be better. Or you can create a new reality. And Aaron Rodgers, I think, is sitting there thinking – the Packers are mostly committed to me. Mostly. I'm going to be mostly committed to them. But I'm going to do this, and that pays eight figures too. And I know that maybe I'm dreaming this up in my head, but I do think Aaron is frustrated. They couldn't sign Jared Cook. They didn't give him a heads up with his quarterback coach. They couldn't keep his Pro Bowl center. And here's Brady and Breeze and Mahomes with all-star teams. They can seemingly afford multiple stars. The Jeopardy thing, and I do think Aaron would really like to do it and be great at it, but I do wonder if he's saying, you know what? You're mostly committed to me. Maybe I'm mostly committed to you. Your thoughts?
Well, Aaron Rodgers is a different cat. We all know that. He just looks at the world differently than most people. His talent is undeniable. The fact that every team in the NFL would kill to have a quarterback with his skill set, his ability, obviously, to carry a football team on his shoulder. But he looks at the world differently. I mean, there is nobody in the NFL, any position, I think, that really looks at the world the way that Aaron Rodgers does. So nothing would surprise me. I do believe he feels he's got a lot to prove still football-wise. He does have a lot in terms of built up, I think, motivation because of what's happened with the Packers in recent years, and maybe him feeling like he has not been appreciated as much as he feels like he deserves. But in the end, he's a football player. He's a competitor. He wants to show everybody that he is the top quarterback in the NFL still. He wants to get another Super Bowl ring to kind of cement his legacy. He's going to be back, and he's not going to be doing this Jeopardy thing along with being an NFL player. We all know that's not going to happen until he decides to hang up the cleats, and we'll see if it happens. I mean, he may get a spot gig to do a show once or twice down the road, but it's not going to be his gig until he decides to walk away from football.
Got a golf game set for today?
I don't have a golf game set for today. I just got back from Beaver Creek skiing with my kids over spring break. So I'm going to take a few days off here before I get back outside and do anything active.
By the way, that's a dad. Ever been to Beaver Creek? Oh, my God, is that beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Cool. Hey, great seeing you, Steve.
Same here, Carl. Let's do it again.
Yeah, that's a great place to go ski. I went and did a charity for American Airlines a couple years ago. Beaver Creek is nice. You're not a skier.
I've been twice. The first time I just kind of rolled down the hill and cried, so I don't know if that counts. The second time I took a lesson, which I always advise for first-time mountain goers. It's fun. It's a little terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can go down like the little slopes.
Yeah, that's
fine. Do it for a couple hours and then go have a nice cocktail and dinner.
Yeah, well, that's a good part of the experience right there. Aqib Tlaib's going to be joining us today.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
For the first time ever, it's a WrestleMania edition of SmackDown. Friday at 8 Eastern, 7 Central, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Bunch of stuff happening this weekend in Tampa. Got all that WrestleMania stuff this weekend in Tampa.
WrestleMania is a very big deal.
I just talked to the president of WWE, Nick Khan, last night. It's an incredible production. It's going to be crazy. Friday here, then down in Tampa. I was invited to that.
To WrestleMania?
Yeah, I didn't have to. Saturday and Sunday in Tampa.
I want to go to WrestleMania.
He called and asked, and I said, it's just, you know, it's hard to fly cross country.
It is, actually.
You were
actually LA to Tampa. I don't even know if there's a direct flight.
Well, there's probably not. L.A. to Miami, yeah.
Yeah. There's not as many flights in general because of COVID now. It is harder to get to the East Coast in general.
Atlanta to L.A. to Atlanta.
There's always flights to Atlanta.
And then get in your car and just follow the Waffle Houses all the way down to Tampa.
I don't even know the last time I've been in Tampa. That'll be fun, though. That'll be a great weekend.
It will. What do you get when you cross a Mercedes with a race car? You get chills. You get goosebumps. No other way to say it. OMG AMG. Visit MBUSA.com/AMG. Mercedes AMG driving performance. Here is Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News. Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Well, the 49ers traded up to the third overall pick, and now there are a lot of rumors that Mac Jones is their target at that spot. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch attended Alabama's Pro Day to watch Mac Jones last month, but Nick Saban said neither of them asked him anything while they were there, although Saban did add that they maybe thought that they weren't allowed to.
So they didn't ask.
They did not ask Nick Saban anything about Mac Jones.
Well, they would. John Lynch knows the protocol. It's not like they...
It's very odd. I don't think it's right to read into these guys going to pro days necessarily. Like, obviously they are in the market for a quarterback, so them being there means something. But coaches attend pro days for multiple reasons. One, to just assess, obviously, if they want to draft this guy. They could also be getting information that they can one day use about this guy or other guys that are at the pro day. They often scout receivers that they're throwing to as well. So it's not as simple as they're going to the pro day, so now they're going to draft Mac Jones. I personally feel like this is madness, the ascension of Mac Jones.
Not only drafting Mac Jones, if San Francisco did, look at what they gave up to get to three.
Yes.
So you're saying that Mac Jones isn't just your guy. You think he's transformational.
Yes.
Okay, he's not transformational.
He is not. And it sounds like we're attacking Mac Jones, which is not true. What I don't understand fundamentally is this time from the end of the college football season and then the end of the NFL season through the draft, how guys can go from not even in the conversation of a top quarterback in the draft or even a first rounder to then jumping guys like Justin Fields, who throughout the season was 1-2 with Trevor Lawrence, who is the consensus number one overall pick. What's changed? Did they play in like a private league that none of us watched?
Well, that's,
I don't understand it.
Well, that's why I think it's a smokescreen. Listen.
But it's coming from so many places. I'm with you. I think that they're going to take Justin Fields. But the fact that this is an actual genuine conversation about they may be taking him or that he is actually better than Justin Fields or a better prospect than Justin Fields is wild to me. I think it is a product of the fact that we live in a space now where there's so much media coverage, there's so much content that has to be put out day after day after day, and nothing has really actually changed. So we're digging in to like clawing into the meat of these stories to the point that we're just pulling stuff out that doesn't even matter. Or we are just now overanalyzing things. Like Justin Fields is being overanalyzed and Mac Jones is the product of that by being ascended above him.
Think about what the NFL does. Belichick ruled the league for 20 years. And literally in the last year, he goes 7-9, and Robert Kraft questions his drafting. The media says, you're seeing all these negative Belichick stories come out.
Right.
We saw one yesterday. He threw away the scout's recommendation on N'Keal Harry. So this league changes narratives on you instantly if you struggle. This could be a really bad thing for Kyle Shanahan's career. So Kyle was the hottest guy in the world. There's two things now you can't deny. He has blown two leads in two Super Bowls, one as a coach and one as a coordinator. And he doesn't win games without Garoppolo. If he then drafts Mac Jones, he pays a power play over John Lynch, because Lynch doesn't want him, I'm told, and I trust my source. And he goes with Mac Jones, who's average. What is Kyle Shanahan? He doesn't know his expertise as well as we thought. He doesn't win enough games without Garoppolo, and he blows leads in big games. Now, I think Kyle's great, but this league is brutal.
Well, yeah, maybe that's not fair, but
it's
in
true.
Many ways you are the product of your results.
John Harbaugh was about to get fired. Lamar Jackson happened, and now John Harbaugh has an extension. I mean, that's the way the league works. Andy Reid, bum. Wins a Super Bowl, genius, gets blown out in a Super Bowl, we got questions. That's the league. Pete Carroll, genius USC, genius, loses a Super Bowl, passing instead of giving it to Marshawn Lynch, and we're all like, Pete's a little crazy.
No, it's what have you done for me lately? And look, none of us know anything, right? None of us know anything.
Well, you
We've
and
gone,
I.
Oh, well, we know a little bit.
We did break the Brady to Tampa story.
We know more than most. We know more than most. But when it comes to the draft, nobody knows anything, right? Like, we've talked about how many quarterbacks have been drafted in the first round and how many actually work. It's a complete crapshoot. You never know how guys are going to translate to the NFL. We have a pretty good assessment of standout players, Kyle Pitts, Chase Young. There's always one or two obvious players that are going to work in the NFL, and they translate. But other than that, it's really difficult to evaluate. I just think it's very strange how Justin Fields' draft stock has been in question over the past couple months when he was consensus. Even Zach Wilson. Like, even the fact that the Jets like Zach Wilson over Justin Fields to me. Like, Justin Fields was the best player on the field for most of the games he played in. This year, very obvious no, space.
Nobody talked about Zach Wilson a year ago. Wasn't talked about.
It's crazy. So Robbie Anderson and Sam Darnold will reunite in Carolina this year after playing two seasons in New York, and Anderson is looking forward to working with Darnold again.
I think me and Sam had very good chemistry. I think that really stems from communication and, you know, just trust. I think if you look at, you know, the growth between me and Sam, you notice towards the back end of me being with the Jets, him throwing the ball up in double coverage and just throwing the ball up. You know, that came with time and, you know, just trust and me making those plays and, you know, coming through for him in the clutch.
You know, Robbie's an interesting player because he was really talented but inconsistent. And then all of a sudden, he and Darnold pop, and then he got a big fat contract. Robbie's a great example of the Jets' dysfunction. Two players they let walk. They had a kick returner who was like best in the league. They let him go for $3 million. They've never replaced him. And they let Robbie Anderson go. And now what do they need? A speed receiver. Like that shows you the incompetency with the Jets. Robbie, when you have a young quarterback and he finds a great receiver, you just sign him. You just make sure your young Josh Allen, you just, if he, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, you just sign him because it makes Patrick comfortable. Jets had Robbie Anderson, inexplicably let him go.
I mean, you want things to be more comfortable, right? If a guy finds his groove and he's young,
comfort.
Just take one thing off the table for a young quarterback. Okay, well, we know that's good. Let's just keep that and focus on other things that we need to develop. Darnold's 1,341 career passing yards to Robbie Anderson are his most with any player, and he had 11 career touchdown passes. That's the most to any player. So this is a nice, comfortable situation that he's going to with Robbie being there. So the first three picks in the draft this year will be quarterbacks, but there's a big question mark about what the Falcons are going to do at number four. The team is reportedly torn on whether they should draft a quarterback or not. Head coach Arthur Smith thinks Matt Ryan has at least two good years left, but GM Terry Fontenot wants to prepare for the future and get a quarterback this year. I am firmly in the camp that the Falcons should trade this pick. This is from Chris Mortensen. I think they should trade this pick.
They get a lot for it. A lot.
You would get a lot for it. You need a lot. Matt Ryan is not your problem. Matt Ryan is also very expensive. And if you take a quarterback at number four, if you take a quarterback in the second round, if you take a quarterback late in the first round, there's not a sense of urgency for him to get out there right away.
That's right.
I don't think at number four you can do the Patrick Mahomes move. I don't think at number four you can have a quarterback in Atlanta, which is a city that likes its entertainment and they love their Falcons, have a quarterback sitting there and not playing. They're going to want to see him. And if Matt Ryan struggles at all, there's going to be a demand for him to be out there. It's just too high of a draft pick to use on a quarterback when you have someone like Matt Ryan. If you had real questions about the future of Matt Ryan, which I don't think, and I don't think Matt Ryan is, he's obviously capable of taking them to a Super Bowl, right? It's fair to question Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
But you know you're going to have him for this year. You have to pay him. No one is taking that contract.
Well, first of all, his cap hit, I think, is worse next year.
Right. So you essentially have him for 2 years.
Have to pay him.
So if you take and the number four that you're not going to use for 2 years when you could trade back and get multiple picks, how is that a value move?
Well, ask this. Is Trey Lance, or whoever it is, greater? Is he guaranteed to be greater than the leverage the number four pick has?
Right.
Because I don't know how good Trey Lance is going to be. I know that number four pick with a bad college draft next year for quarterbacks could get you two firsts and 2 seconds. I mean, like, I don't even understand why Denver doesn't do it today.
Yes, yeah, so the math just doesn't work for me. And if you know you're going to have Matt Ryan on your roster for the next 2 years, then that's a guy that needs 2 years to develop that no one is going to be banging on the table to have out there for 2 years.
My guess is we will have a move. Atlanta will trade that pick within a week. That's my prediction.
I think they should.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
Joey
news.
And I have been bizarrely lucky in the last 6 weeks that about every fourth day we get a great NFL story. Niners move up to 3. Sam Darnold gets traded. So just on that timeline, I believe I'm going to call it right now. Next Wednesday, the Falcons trade that pick. Because that's been the timeline on our show. About every 6-7 shows, we get like a thing. So Sam Darnold, was it Monday? Yeah, it was Monday night.
Monday.
Okay, so yeah, next Wednesday, Atlanta will move that pick. It'll either be Chicago, Washington, Denver, New England, That's my guess.
That's kind of wild, because that's how rare is it that we pretty much know what the first five picks of the draft, at least the positions, are going to be.
Yeah, if somebody trades out for number four, quarterbacks are going 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Mark Dominic, former NFL GM, friend of the show, smart guy, next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He was part of the Bucs scouting department that won that Super Bowl years ago, 2002, 2003, drafted Lavonte David. Mark Dominic, with over 20 years scouting, drafting, was the Bucs GM. A friend of mine joins us now live as the draft now is in late April. So it is interesting. Joy and I were just talking about Atlanta and the number four pick. It is it's a bad quarterback college draft class next year. So I could make the argument that number four pick is your last chance for the next 2 years for a team to get a really high-end quarterback. So to me, that's greater leverage than it is a certainty that the number four pick would be a great NFL player. I would trade that thing for a boatload of picks and trust my scouting department that we could land five or six good players. Your thought on Atlanta going forward, what to do?
Yeah, no, Colin, I agree with you. I think Atlanta's hoping for that phone call, because you look at the board, like the way it's put together, and Sewell's going to go really high, but they have Jake Matthews. They could still take Sewell and put Matthews inside. You know, Ja'Marr Chase deserves to go right up there, but they've got, you know, obviously Calvin Ridley, and they still have Julio Jones and Gage. They've got a good receiving core. So the true draft board doesn't line up as well with Atlanta as maybe another club. And so they're in a position where I think you want to move back. And I'm thinking you're only hoping to move back like three or four spots because of the talent of this draft class right at the top. But I think Atlanta should and hopefully is fielding offers, because everybody knows that's where the draft starts now, is number four.
Yeah. You know, so the Panthers give up three picks, a sixth, which this year, I've been told this year, after about midway through the fourth round, it's a pretty lean draft. So who cares about the sixth? But they also gave up a second and a fourth to get Sam Darnold. Now, you could certainly argue that's more than what we thought the market would bear for Sam Darnold. Were you bothered that Carolina gave up too much to get 23-year-old Sam?
I don't think they gave up too much at all, Colin. I mean, I look at it look this way. Sam Darnold still has potential that we see. He's still very coachable. Everybody likes him. He's a good teammate. He's a good worker. All those kind of things are there. So you give up the six, and I agree, that's just kind of fodder, and you can make that up during the draft at any time with a quick little trade. Giving up a two and a four, think of it this way. The Miami Dolphins gave up a two for Josh Rosen, and everybody kind of knew that Josh Rosen already wasn't a very good quarterback, had all those issues about leadership. That's why his career really hasn't panned out. To me, a two and a four is actually a very good deal, I think, for the Carolina Panthers to give it a shot, to sit there and say, hey, this might be the guy. And finally, hopefully surrounding him with talent, which is why it was important they held on to their number one pick, because I think that's going to be a skill player for Sam Darnold to throw to.
You know, and I don't recall in your career, like certain organizations, Cincinnati has a history, Mark, that they're kind of Midwest conservative. They don't make deals. It's kind of odd, but a lot of the coastal cities, you know, your Philadelphias, your New Yorks, the Rams, Seattle, for whatever reason, there's this myth. Now Cleveland's different, but Green Bay, the Colts are pretty frugal. Cincinnati's very conservative. There are organizations that just don't make deals, and Cincinnati's one of them. And there are other organizations that will always take a phone call. Let's say New England wants to get up in the draft, and New England looks at it and thinks, listen, Cam's fine for a year, but Belichick's watching Brady. He's going to get somebody. Do you find, is it easier to trade out of the top 10 or to trade into the top 10 as a former GM?
I think it's easier to trade out of the top 10 because you have more control over what you're willing to take. And you can look at the board and go, okay, if I'm going to go back to 11, or if I'm going back to 13, or if I'm going back to 9 and then going back again, you have more control over understanding what the board looks like. When you're trying to go up, you're so afraid you're going to overpay. You're trying to figure out what's the right value because you really don't know. And so for like a New England, I think it's harder to crack in there because it's going to cost you more. When you're coming back out, I think it's a little bit easier. The myth is that the phone's not always ringing. I can remember a couple of times where I was GM in the first round and I'm like, maybe we'll trade this pick. And I'm like, hey, pick up the phone and see if that thing still works. You know, no one's calling and I want to trade out, but he just can't have a trade. But I do think it's easier to move out because you are in more control over what you still think you're going to get instead of what you're all giving up. And I think that that's what you're looking for. Cincinnati, though, you're right. They've been run by the Brown family for so long. Tobin's in there. They are praying that Sewell's on the board at five. I know that.
Oh, okay. All right. So if you look at the history of the league, there's never been four quarterbacks taken with the first four picks. If you look at since 2010, 130 quarterbacks taken overall, 11 to 12 have been hits. So all these quarterbacks are not going to work. I do think Trevor Lawrence is a hit with Urban Meyer. After that, my takeaway is whoever San Francisco drafts three, that'll be the second one because landing spot matters. And then I hear about Mac Jones. Shouldn't I be a little concerned? Being quarterback in the NFL is about dealing with discomfort. This kid never trailed in the second half of a football game, always had a better coach. He lived a world of comfort at Alabama. Wouldn't that worry you a little with Mac Jones?
You know what? I could think of the same thing with Tua a year ago, and I sit there and look at Mac Jones. And as you may know, Colin, I spend a lot of time with these young Alabama players just kind of talking to them about getting ready for the draft, how to interview, ways to do. I've asked these guys over and over, talk to me about Mac Jones, and every Alabama player loves him, whether they're on the offensive side or the defensive side. They say he puts the time in, he's a grinder, he's a great guy, he's a leader, he's got the arm, I've talked to them all. They all love Mac Jones to a point where I'm like, I got to go back and watch more tape because I wasn't as high on him as I thought I should be. And so you go back and watch and then you start hearing all the intangibles and everything about it. I think that's why Shanahan and John Lynch have fallen in love with him is because they know that they're getting a polished player who's going to do everything he can to be the best pro he can be.
Yeah. The draft is so much fun. I was in the Chargers draft room a couple years ago, and the energy is unbelievable. I've said before, I went to Wimbledon once. That's as great as experiences I've ever had. And then sitting in a draft room for the first round is insane. The energy of it. How much for a draft do you know that's going to transpire? Like when you go into a draft, do you have a sense like, okay, here's where we're at, and here's who's going to be available? And how much of it is, oh, crap. We got to make a decision. We got 7 minutes. How planned can you be as a GM?
Well, the draft really should be very smooth. I think the only excitement to your point is like you're just waiting for that phone call to ring if you want to make a move to go get a player. I can remember I called 10 teams in a row to try to trade up to get Lavonte David. 10 times they said no. And I was stressed out because he was the last linebacker that we loved. And that was Bobby Wagner's class. That was a special linebacker class. Luke Kuechly was in that class. And so I was stressed out. So that moment in the draft room, it's a lot different. But going into the draft room, we always had a running six, meaning we knew the next six players were already going to take no matter what happens. And that should be planned out. That should be already set up because you should stack your board the night before, finalize it, and just be like, hey, look, this is my favorite player, second favorite player, third favorite, and just having it stacked. The only time you change it is after you make a selection, then you reshuffle the draft because obviously if you take a quarterback, you're not going to come back in the second round and take a quarterback. So that's the only tweak, but you should be able to go to autopilot when this draft is on and say, we know who our best players. The great part about the draft is the actual maneuvering like you talked about. And I think what you're seeing with these GMs, like I did a lot of trades with Howie Roseman. He's still doing it. John Schneider, he's still doing it. These younger GMs are enjoying the trade aspect of it, and that makes it even that much more exciting.
Yeah. God. There are days, there are slow days in sports radio. I wish I would have chosen football management. Can you major in that?
It's close. It's close. Sports management, football management, but yeah, it's pretty close. Managing people, but it's great. I mean, the NFL has done a great job of building this draft up to what it is, and having met with over 100 of these college athletes already individually for over an hour a piece. It's a really good character draft too. I'm excited about some of these guys they're going to bring to their franchises.
Oh, that's great to hear. Mark Dominic, former NFL GM. Good seeing you, Mark.
Good to see you, Colin.
Good character draft. I like to hear that. You know, I think players by and large are getting smarter. There's just too much money in it. You know, I talk about this all the time. How lucky is the NFL that Patrick Mahomes is a great kid. I mean, seriously, you could. I'm not going to mention names, but there's guys you could have drafted that Patrick Mahomes is a great kid, and that Andrew Luck was a great kid. Russell Wilson's a great kid. By the way, they all have some quirks, but they're like Josh Allen. Kids make mistakes. They send out stupid tweets. I'm not saying they're perfect, but by and large, they're committed. They're good teammates. They're smart with their money.
You just have so much access, like even access to Mark and access to former players and access to information when you're coming into the league now that didn't exist before. Like you could have your whole financial future set up before you even get drafted. Like everything's in place. You've got financial managers, the agents know, you know where all your money is going, you know where you can invest, you know businesses you can invest in. It's just a whole different world.
And these kids, how mature were you at 23?
I was not mature.
Yeah, that's the thing. These kids are 22, 23. We're giving them $100 million. And overwhelmingly, they totally have their act together.
Yeah, if you gave me $100 million at 23, I would not be sitting here across from you. That's not where I would be.
I'd be drinking Cristal right now in somebody's bathtub. All right, hour three is around the corner. Show is flying by. Aqib Talib, TJ Hushman's out of next.